Hello, and welcome to Be Indie Now, a podcast about independent game development. I'm your host, Tobias Marks, and with me today is Joe Benqual. Hey.
Hi. Nice to be here.
So, why do you make games?
Well, I got started in making games when I played StarCraft. That was definitely the most memorable one, and it all was because of the editor that came with it, which was really powerful and flexible. And you could play custom maps that other people uploaded online, and you could download them. They were all open source. You could see what they did, how they did the cool things that made fun gameplay, and that's what got me hooked initially.
How old were you doing that?
I was probably 12 years old when I started.
Cool. Did you?
And, sorry.
Did you do any other modding, did you just kind of get into StarCraft?
Yeah, I dabbled a little bit with like Age of Empires and other games that shipped with map editors, but you know, StarCraft was the one where you could really make things and there was a big community around it.
So when you started going to college, you went with the intent that I want to make games for a living?
Yeah, and what happened to me is that I would spend just as much time playing other people's creations as making my own. And I had a ton of fun making my own creations and testing them, especially with Warcraft 3. I spent hours and hours and hours making this ridiculous tower defense that had 100 waves and 60 different towers that I never actually released onto the internet. But I had a ton of fun just making it and expressing myself with creativity.
Yeah, that sounds great. I did that the same when I was that age. What degree did you go for in college? Did you go for more of a programming degree? Do you want to go more for design, art, level to stuff?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to be a game designer and, you know, to just make maps in Warcraft 3, but there wasn't really a career path that I was aware of, and my parents pressured me to get an engineering job because my dad was in electrical engineer, and so I ended up applying with a computer engineering degree to college. I ended up changing it to computer science because that was a lot less restrictive on what I could take for extra curriculum types of classes, and but I really enjoy programming, but my intent was always to get into the industry through programming and then try to transition towards design.
Yeah, it's really good, too, to have a strong secondary skill to your design. So a designer who codes is a lot more useful than a designer who can just write. I know a lot of designers also do art for that very reason. Where did you go to school?
I went to school at UC Davis.
How did you like it?
It was really great. I basically decided that while I was in college, I wasn't going to worry too much about what came next, which might have been a little bit of a mistake, but instead I just focused. It's like I have these friends that I'm only going to hang out with until the end of college, and everyone's going to split up. So I just kind of maximized the amount of fun, and to the detriment of perhaps advancing my career in terms of internships and getting a head start when I left college.
So, like, by having fun, you mean like just hanging out? Were you making games on the side?
Yeah, I wanted, like, I always thought, I was like, oh, I should be making, like, a really awesome Warcraft 3 map and apply to Blizzard, or making really awesome, like, Oblivion had just come out, like, when midway through college, like, I could make something really cool in the Oblivion editor and then get a job at Bethesda, and I'm sure that would have worked if I really went for it, but I didn't have the commitment, and it's hard to convince yourself to spend all of your free time, hundreds of hours working on something when you don't know for sure that you're going to get a job out of it, even though I'm pretty sure they look for passionate people like that.
So when did you graduate?
I graduated in 2009.
That's the same year you started your company, right?
Yeah. So
how did that happen?
Basically, I graduated late. So most people graduate in the spring. I graduated in August.
Hey, same as me. August 2009.
Yeah. And I kind of half-heartedly applied to some jobs. Like, I went through a lot of college recruitment And that was a lot more effective in getting me at least phone screenings. But, you know, I didn't have an amazing GPA because, like, I'm a really good programmer, but I'm not really good at math and, like, tests. And I had trouble, but, you know, it's probably because I wasn't really, you know, applying myself to get a job. I had a lot of...
You're just, you know, wanting to do your own thing, not really sure the direction you wanted to take.
Yeah.
So how you didn't start your company by yourself. How did you meet your co-founders?
So I was looking for jobs and my friend just said, "Hey, I saw this Craigslist ad for games. I know you're interested in games industry." And I just went and applied for the interview. It was super informal. Basically, he just asked some questions to make sure I knew stuff. I ended up being more experienced and talented than the programmer who was working there originally, because he was, you know, 2 years younger than me, still a student in college. And so they basically said, "Hey, you got the job." It was an unpaid job, but they really sold me on the idea because, you know, it was a time when the games industry was transitioning towards fewer titles, focusing on the big hits like Call of Duty, and they weren't being as creative as they used to be. And here was this small indie team who embraced the values of, we're going to make a game that's fun. We don't care about making millions of dollars. We think we have a great idea, and we just hope that when we put it out there, people will enjoy it.
So did they give you a market share percentage of the game, or were you just doing it?
Yeah, so they gave me a percentage of the company. Originally, it was very small, but after I had been working there for a while, they said, you know, you're basically a partner in the company now. I was the only programmer. There was the CEO, and then there was a designer, and then we had some artists who we paid per piece of art. Mm-hmm. So I ended up with 33% of the company.
And it's called The Pumpkin Betrayal, right?
Yeah.
So were there at the ground floor, or had it been around for a while before you started? You said you had a different programmer, but was that like a couple months, or was it?
Yeah. So the company started about 6 months before I got there. It was sort of the senior project of Derek, the CEO. He, you know, took a business class where they had to make a business plan, and then he looked at his business plan and said, "Hey, let's make a game out of it." And then he found some friends who already had an idea for a game, and so they kind of merged those two together, and they formed the core of the company. And then they got some local students who were computer science majors who wanted to make a game. I don't know exactly how, maybe friends of friends and things like that. And so they had four programmers who, over the summer, cranked out, you know, the shell of the game. And then they kind of got burnt out and decided to go back to school and not worry about the game anymore.
So you guys got the company going. You're the new programmer. It's working out great. How many projects did you work on?
Projects for the game?
For you know, for the company. Like, were you doing like a new project every 3 months? Were you working on one big one for a year?
Yeah, no, we worked on... It was the monolithic, we're going to make a gigantic MMO game. And, you know, originally we thought it would take maybe, from when I got there, a year or so to launch into alpha. But that got pushed back several times. And it didn't help that when we first started, we weren't really working full time on it. And that was because the one remaining programmer was a student, so he's working part-time. And then it took us a while to transition into working a full schedule and then even, you know, working overtime and things like that.
So how are you guys funding yourselves? Were you just self-funding whatever you can manage, or do you have any Kickstarter backers or venture capitalists?
Yeah. So Derek put in, he was basically funding it. He had $50,000 saved up. We did get a couple offers for VC funding, but we didn't end up pursuing it because well, we weren't really experienced and we weren't, you know, it was sort of like, hey, I think you, I'll give you $200,000. You have 24 hours. And, you know, we couldn't make the decision in that amount of time, even though we know that investors want to see people who are ready to grab for those opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I don't know really what it would have happened, but yeah, we were self-funded and, you know, we definitely had to work within the budget. It was a very big constraint. You know, we used all open source software. Everything was free. And sometimes we went through some pains because of that, switching between, you know, free audio libraries until we found out one that worked for us.
So why were you using like a free audio library versus something where you could just do like a premiumbeats.com and throw like $50 that way and get a good soundtrack?
Oh yeah, no, we were definitely using, we definitely bought sound effects. That paying for art and sound work is something we did, but in terms of the programming side, like most companies use FMod or something like that. We used OpenAL and then we used Ogvorbis on top of OpenAL and then we scrapped that out and found a much more lightweight, easier to use library that didn't crash on us.
Well, why don't you tell me about the game at this point? It's called Jolly Grim.
Yeah.
Tell me about
So Jolly Grim is a card-based game, and it's kind of on the borderline between it's an actual game where you need cards for it to make sense, and the cards are more of a business model. We definitely wanted to make sure that it was a free-to-play game that people didn't feel cheated by. So you buy booster packs or you earn them through by playing the game. And then you take your cards that you get and you create a roster for a battle. So you could choose up to 7 cards, you put them on a grid, and then you fight against the other enemy player to the death. And they move around the board like chess pieces. Like, so there's some that can move diagonally, some that can move like a knight, you know, an L shape, things like that. But each piece is unique. Each card has its own unique movement range and attack range. And unlike chess where they die in one hit, these cards have, you know, like 50 hit points, they have 10 attack, or 15 attack. So there is a ton of complexity in terms of what the different card possibilities are.
Were you big fans of Magic the Gathering and other kinds of collectible games before, or were you just inspired from that mechanic from a monetization
Sorry, point? You cut out for me.
Were you a fan of Magic the Gathering and card games like that before, or were you just appealed to it because of it as a monetization method?
That was the interesting thing, because the people who designed the game, they haven't played any of the popular trading card games. Their entire basis for the game was this mini game in Final Fantasy VIII, I believe, called Triple Triad, where you have a 9-square grid, so 3x3, and you put down cards, and they have different numbers in different directions. And if your number is higher than the adjacent one, then you flip it over, kind of like Othello. And you're just, one of you places 4 cards, and one of you places 5, depending on who goes first, and then you try to flip over more cards than the opponent did. And they took that concept and said, well, what if instead of flipping over cards, you're attacking and you have hit points? And then added in sort of the chess elements on top of that. And so when I came in, you know, I had a lot of experience with Magic the Gathering and other card games. And so I was able to tie some of those concepts into the game a little bit.
Oh, were they like interested in hearing those ideas and trying out those games? Or were they saying like, eh, that doesn't interest me?
Yeah, I mean, they all play, we all play a lot of games, but Derek mostly plays fighting games, and Ryan likes playing JRPGs, so does Derek. I'm more of a strategy and RPG player, so we each had different areas with some overlap, and I think that's really useful because if you have a wide variety of experience when you're making a game, it allows you to draw from a lot of different inspirations.
Yeah, definitely. So who would you say your target audience is for the game? That hardcore gamer, or were you trying to go for a more broad group?
Definitely at the beginning, it was the hardcore gamer. We were hoping that some of the fighting game community would embrace the game because we were designing it to be a one versus one competitive game with tournament support and things like that. Towards the end, we realized that, you know, if we want to make any money off of it, we need to put in some things for casual players, a nice tutorial. And that was actually really interesting. Is originally it was just going to be competitive online matchmaking and a single player, a very brief single player tutorial to just get you into the multiplayer. And what we found was that the game was complex enough that the tutorial was way too wordy. It was like 20 pages of text.
Oh, yeah, but that's way too much.
So what we ended up doing is and that might have been an exaggeration, but we created a single-player campaign and said, well, if we just make 10 or 15 missions with some story in between, then we can introduce one or two mechanics every battle and get players up to speed. And as soon as they feel comfortable, they can jump out of the single-player and go into the multiplayer. And so that's one of the things that, you know, stretched it out to 4 years of game development is we made all this server infrastructure, then we made this big campaign. And then, and so that kind of just kept adding on features, and, you know, feature bloat can be a really big issue for game developers.
Were you working on this full time, or were you also doing other jobs while working on it?
Yeah, I was working on it full time. Definitely after 6 months or 9 months, I started working on it full time, 40 hours a week.
That's hard doing 4 years of that. So is the game done now?
Yeah, the PC version of the game, well, we got it to the point where we thought it was ready to at least go into an open beta. And we sort of did our best to launch the game. I did a bunch of research on PR, made a PR list, who to send it to. We created a press release. We did a Kickstarter campaign. We did all kinds of stuff. But in the end, it kind of flopped. We didn't really get much attention. We got a couple articles written. We got maybe a few dozen or 100 or so downloads. And we kind of, you know, gave up on it. We tried our best and we realized that we just didn't have the resources, the social network, or the expertise to launch the game off the ground. Especially since we didn't have money to actually pay, you know, $10,000 or more for an ad campaign.
How long ago was this when you decided you were done with it?
That was about a year ago. And then was it 2 years ago? I'm losing track of time now.
A while ago at this point.
Yeah. And then we got contacted a few months later after we gave up and started going separate ways, working on a new project. We got contacted by a publisher and said, hey, you know, I saw this game. It looks really interesting. Would you be interested in partnering with us? And that sort of breathed new life into the game because now, you know, we could take this thing we'd been working on and finally give it a chance to succeed in the market if it was deemed viable, which, of course, that's not exactly how it works. You know, we really felt the build it and they will come strategy would work for us, but in the end, I guess it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of developers I talk to don't really know much about marketing, so their thoughts is, oh, well, I'll build it and they'll come and it will just grow naturally. And no, it takes a lot more work than that to market, and it doesn't necessarily need a lot of money to market. It's not just a straight cash game where you exchange money for fame. But, you know, you have to be able to work it. It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of practice, takes a lot of skill to iterate on that. And that's something that a publisher can offer since they've gone through that experience before. Can you say the name of the publisher?
Yeah, it is Game Samba.
Tell me about them.
So, You know, when we first met with them, it was really opaque exactly what we were getting into, who these people were. They were ex-game developers. They had made some console games, I think, for the PlayStation 2 or the original PlayStation. I don't remember. Worked with a publisher. They got kind of screwed out of it, didn't end up making any money. At some point decided, hey, maybe we should become publishers. And since then, they've published some, you know, free-to-play online titles, and we were a new addition that they thought was promising. And mostly it was because, you know, Brendan, who was in charge of researching and recruiting potential new games, you know, had an eye for stuff that stood out. And our game was definitely unique, which we were really glad that someone appreciated that.
So what did they do to help with the game? Did they want to have you change the mechanics, or did they just take it and start marketing it?
Yeah. So, you know, it was very different from what you hear about, you know, AAA publishers. They were very hands-off. They were sort of saying, hey, you have this great game here. We just want to help you finish it. We're going to do some small, very small changes that we suggest. For example, there's a couple, all of the cards in our game are based off of myths, legends, and fairy tales. So you got things like Aladdin and Huckleberry Finn, and they're like, well, technically those are public domain, but because there's these big Disney properties around them, we'd rather you just substitute those out with something else, but you can keep everything else.
Yeah, just to prevent, you know, legal battles that might ensue.
Yeah,
Disney is particular with their IPs.
Yeah. And then they also went through some of the artwork and said, well, these ones aren't very high quality, and we kind of agreed. There weren't too many of those. There were a few more. They said, well, this card is a little bit too abstract, so we'd like to get it redone. And those ones we were kind of pushing back against a little bit. Some of them we said, no, we don't want to change it. Other ones we're like, well, all right, because I guess, you know, for young kids, maybe like who are 10 or 12 years old, they might not see like a cloud with a lightning bolt and realize, oh, that's Zeus, but a much more, you know, abstract form of him. People might more expect to see, you know, a guy holding a lightning bolt. And so, yeah, they paid for new artwork. They, you know, had this outsourced team that was much cheaper than our friend who we were paying to do the art. So we like paying our friends to do art for us, but at the same time, if we can get 10 times as much art for the same price, it's hard to turn it down, even if the quality isn't always up to par.
What kind of schedule did you put you on?
Working on the game?
As soon as possible, like, were they giving you a time limit?
Yeah. So again, they were very hands-off. You know, when they first talked to me, I said, you know, okay, well, I was going to do PayPal integration for the, but they said, no, we have this web store set up, so you just need to make it so inside the game you can go to a web page and they'll buy stuff through that. And so I was like, okay, well, I think that I can get that done in like 5 months or so, like finish all of these big list of changes they wanted for the game, like making a new tutorial on top of the single player campaign. We still had to finish the single player campaign. There were a few missions left and some new features we want to add. So we had this big list of things, and we said, well, we think it'll take like 5 months, but we had just transitioned from working in an office to working at home. That caused me to be a lot less productive. There was a lot less communication between people, and it ended up taking a lot longer than that. But they never said anything for about... So we kept on adding features, taking our time, you know, problems would come up, and we were months and months and months behind schedule, and we didn't really hear anything from them. But they're like, oh yeah, it'd be nice if you could give us a new build so we can take it to this convention in Korea where we're showing it to a bunch of publishers. Like, occasionally we'd hear from them and there would be long periods of silence.
There wasn't any hard contract hoops of you have to get through it this time to get this milestone?
No, the contract was if one of the parties was egregiously not doing their job, you could take them to court and sue them. The contract would be void, basically. But we're basically tied together. We're both going to do our best and kind of trusting each other that way.
So it sounds like you had a really positive relationship with them.
Yeah, and the problem was that because we didn't communicate with them, we only met with them once in person, and we didn't talk to them very much for the first stage of the relationship. We didn't really know what was going on. We didn't know if we could trust them, if they were really going to pull through in terms of the marketing stuff. We didn't see the artwork that they promised us for at least 6 months, besides a few concepts early on. So we kind of just went at our own pace, and we weren't really sure if we could trust them and things like that. And once I actually flew down to Seattle about a year after we made the project, because they're like, hey, you're really behind schedule. I know you're almost done, but we need to like meet and get through some technical issues and get everything on board. And when I actually met with them, you know, they're really great people. There's some really smart people there. They kind of got an idea of some of the technical challenges I was doing, because I was using open source libraries that I wanted to deploy on Linux and Mac and Windows, and integrating multiple libraries together. And sometimes there's conflicts and things like that. It was very challenging for me.
So what was the biggest feedback that you got from them when you were going through those technical stuff?
Basically that we should switch to Unity. I mean, that's basically what came out of it, is we kind of looked at Unity a little bit right when we made the deal with the publisher, and we decided to stick with the technology stack that we had because we knew it worked. But, you know, basically after meeting with the publishers, we immediately started porting the game to Unity, and we never quite finished porting the full MMO aspect to Unity, but we got it almost done in a couple months. Which,
wow, that's
of course,
really impressive. You're working on it for years, and in just a couple months, you're able to get the majority over. That's quite an undertaking.
Well, yeah, we were able to take the C++ code and convert it to C# very easily. And also, we had developed a lot of sophisticated tools over the years to help us get faster and faster and faster. And also, we just knew the game and the systems really well by that point. So yeah, we ended up finishing the PC game. We had the web browser working. This wasn't the Unity version, but in the C++ version that was cross-platform. And we finally finished everything. There were still things on the to-do list, but it was good enough to launch. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the publisher met with all of, because their strategy isn't to funnel a huge marketing arm and sell a bunch of stuff in the US. Their strategy was to go for the easier markets, partner with other companies in China, in South America, in Africa, that,
the,
you know,
the
like
smaller
phone
markets
companies,
where there's less competition.
Yeah, places where they...
Well, there is a lot actually in China. It's not exactly a small market, but there are a lot of places overseas that are smaller.
Well, yeah, they're not small. They're more developing markets where it's easier. It's a little bit easier to penetrate, and you can make deals with people who have sort of monopolies, like, you know, hey, you know, we have all these customers who will play basically any game we release because there's not enough games being released for them.
Are you primarily looking for web browser-based players or downloads, or are you going for mobile?
Well, that was a... And I think that was sort of a disconnect, is that we were working on a PC game, but a lot of the people they talked to were mostly interested in web and mobile. And so that's basically what happens. We finished the PC version, and then they're like, you know what? Our strategy is sort of falling through. A lot of the companies we were partnered with went out of business, and we don't have distributor platforms in those other countries anymore. And so the PC project got put on pause, which was really disturbing for me, because, you know, I'd spent 4 years on it and finally it was done, and I just wanted to give it a chance again to see if we would get thousands of fans who like really appreciate the unique and hardcore nature of the game. And so they basically said, okay, we're not giving up on it yet, but we think that we should maybe try to build up some attention, and there's a lot of people interested in mobile. what do you guys think about making a mobile game? And we basically said we were just thinking about that too. We were talking about it, how mobile was really big, and we were thinking about ways we could adapt the game to work on a phone, and we were really excited at the proposition.
Yeah, what's nice about Unity is that you can have that web version and that mobile version in one build.
Yeah. So basically, in a period of, I told the publisher we can do it in 6 weeks. It ended up taking us 7. But again, we knew the game so well. We knew our own capabilities so well by that point, you know. We were able to just go into Unity. All this stuff we learned, like adapting the PC version to Unity, we started a brand new project for mobile. We looked at all the resolutions. We figured out how to do the resolution scaling. We like mapped out the screen. It's like, how big do we want the buttons to be? How many buttons can we fit? And we sort of pieced together a mobile version of the same game. We got rid of the grid because we didn't want people to pinch and zoom around like this real-time strategy game where you're moving creatures and attacking and using abilities. So it's like, okay, one creature for you at a time, one creature for the enemy, kind of like Pokemon. You can rotate your creatures in and out, but it still has the same essence. We're still using the same back end for a lot of it in terms of the stats.
So it sounds like the gameplay is pretty fundamentally
different. The abilities are very similar.
Yeah, so that's a pretty fundamentally different gameplay. Or yeah, instead of having multiple choice in that grid, you're just focusing on the one.
Yeah, it was definitely a compromise. You know, we said it's going to be probably less fun. It's going to be less hardcore than the original game. But we also loved the challenge. Me and Ryan, especially as designers, of, you know, how can we adapt this to a different experience? You know, we don't have right click and hotkeys anymore. You just have touch. And we had a lot of fun just finding ways to introduce new game mechanics. So instead of moving around the grid, it's like your movement timer allows you to rotate cards in and out of the roster, take them off the bench and put them in the play, like tag team.
You know, a lot of times technical.
But then we came up with other things like, well, we have this idea.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that a lot of time technical constraints like that can help your design a lot, because simpler isn't necessarily less fun. It actually can lead to a better gameplay experience there. You're kind of caught up in, well, this is the game, this is the mechanic, this is core. And then when you're forced to remove it, you're like, actually, it works okay doing this, but then it flows better and gets a wider audience.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things about Jollygrim is that it's on a chess grid, but cards have a different attack value for each cardinal direction. So if you hop over a card and then attack it from your back, you might do more damage. There's, in fact, the ninja card was specially designed that it could teleport behind a card and then attack it from behind. But in the grand scheme of things, it didn't really matter that much. It was sort of, if you played by positioning was like 90% of the game, just like in chess. If you control the center of the board, you have a pretty large advantage. So we took that mechanic of stats in different directions and said, well, what if you can, you know, kind of like a rotary dial, like rotate your card instead of swapping in a card from the bench. And then we are playing in on this idea of stats in different directions. And then we kind of took it to the next level and said, well, what if some of your sides have zeros? So you have like a weak side. And so you can try to rotate the enemy to their weak side and attack them, and then you won't get counterattacked. And then we chained in these abilities we have, like, well, you can push him, and then the next guy comes in, rotated badly. And you can set up these chain combos where you attack, rotate, push, attack, you know, pull. And once these awesome combos begin to emerge, it's like, wow, we really have something. This game has something to appeal for even the more hardcore tactical players.
Sounds really, really cool. So what time are we at this point when you're working on the iOS version and the Android version? Usually a Windows version, or just for those two?
Right now it's just iOS and Android, but there's no reason why we couldn't put it on another app store, and I'm sure we will if we get a good number of sales.
So, like, when did you finish that? How long ago was this?
That was, so we started, I think, at the end of August, and we finished at the beginning of October, again, around 7 weeks.
So what happened then?
Then, so, yeah, a couple things happened. Then, at that point, I decided that I was done working for 33% of the company. I felt like I had earned my 33%, and I needed a paycheck. I was, I felt like I was in stasis over the last 4 years, pouring my heart and soul into this game, working long hours, not really having too much time to pursue other interests. And so I said, I'm going to get a new job. I'm going to start doing more activities. I need to move on from this game. Like, I really enjoyed working on it, but at that point, there was still no guarantee that I would make any money, that it would become a real self-sustaining career. And so I needed to move on.
Yeah, totally.
And so
totally
I kind of handed the reins over to the remaining guys. The game was done. They just needed to polish it a little bit and put it on the App Store. And then months passed. They spent a lot of time polishing it. They spent a lot of time just getting test flight working so that they could test the apps. Spent a lot of time getting devices so they could do a little bit of device testing and optimization. And I helped out with some of that here and there while I was looking for a job. But once I took my hands off of it, and they slowed way down, and there wasn't anyone to sort of say, guys, this is ridiculous. This should have been done a week ago, a month ago. Come on, publisher, what are you doing? Come on, Ryan, Derek, what are you doing? So, I wouldn't say that I was always like the leader necessarily, but definitely once I left, things kind of fell apart a little bit.
So was there any tension between you and your former partners, with you leaving?
Yeah, there was. We definitely got into a little bit of an argument. They got pretty upset about it. Also just for other reasons, like we spent a year working from home, never really seeing each other, barely even talking to each other, and the project became way behind schedule, and I had a lot of stuff on my plate, and when you don't talk to people and things fall behind schedule, you kind of start to wonder if people care, are they working on it? And so there was just a lot of tension between us. And it definitely came out while we were working in my room, meeting here every day, 5 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week, cranking out that mobile port. And so we definitely kind of had a little bit of a falling out, but we got over it after a month or so when we kind of realized, we've been in this together for 4 years. We're all very passionate and attached to the project. We just want it to get done, to succeed. Hopefully we can keep working on it. I'm kind of not really going to be part of it anymore, maybe helping out a little bit here and there, but there's still extensions of the single player campaign, the storyline that are planned out, and it'd be really cool to see that get finished. So we finished it in October. Now it is March, and this week the iOS version went up in the App Store. The Android version was supposed to go up today and it didn't, but I'm sure there's a good explanation for that, and it'll probably be up next week. They're planning to do a press and marketing thing the publisher promised us. Hopefully that will turn out pretty successful. So, finally, we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. Where can people find those links? At jollygrim.com?
Unfortunately, right now jollygrim.com just says mobile version in development. Again, I think the publishers, they're moving offices and they're going through some stuff, so I guess we can forgive them a little bit. They'll put everything together when they're ready, I'm sure, but You can get Jolly Grim from the App Store, the iOS App Store right now, and just search Jolly Grim, one word, and you will find it.
Awesome. So that brings us to present day. So what are you doing lately?
Yeah, so I just got a job at this mobile app company called Swooped. It's kind of in the borderline between a normal app and a game because it's like a fantasy sports app and you can bet real money and win real money. And it has a fairly small but very passionate audience to start with, and it's growing. And, you know, there's a huge amount of sports fans, so it could get really big. So it's pretty exciting. And the app is very fun to play if you have, you know, money to spend.
Sounds cool. Do you like working there?
Yeah, it's a fun environment. It's again, a small startup like I joined before, except they're a real, you know, business-oriented startup. The one I joined was super ad hoc. Just a couple guys in their garage, basically. And this setup is much more formal. We have VC funding. You know, we have a board of directors. The two business guys really know their stuff. They have a lot of connections. So definitely I could see this company going somewhere.
Very cool. That was a really interesting story. Thank you very much for taking the time to kind of go through your entire history. Do you have one piece of advice that you wish you could have given yourself back in 2009 before starting out? Something that you would really, like one mistake that you didn't want to make again, or I don't know, just some advice in general?
There's a lot of mistakes, you know, and that's how you get better and how you improve.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you're not making mistakes, you're not trying, right? The goal is to fail, but fail often and hopefully fail early.
I would say that whenever it doesn't matter if you're working alone or you're working with a team. If you run into issues, reach out for help. Reach out to other developers, reach out to your friends and family, reach out to your coworkers, even if it seems like they're disinterested, even if if you're a programmer and they don't know anything about programming, tell someone about the problem you're having. And at the very least, they'll know about it and maybe give you support. And many times people can surprise you. They might go on Google for a few minutes and find something that for some reason you couldn't find after hours of searching. Or they might have a friend who they can talk to who can help you out. So reach out to the community is my advice.
And that's always good advice. You don't want to develop in a vacuum for multiple reasons. You want to get feedback from your game, and you also want to just get, you know, feedback from yourself, make yourself accountable of where you can get caught up, especially if you're working from home, because you can kind of get into a headspace and beat your head against the problem that is simple if you just took, you know, the night off, rested, and went back to it. And, oh, hey, it was just this one thing that went wrong. Very good advice. Thank you very much for talking and telling the story. I always like to end the show with talking about what games we've been playing lately. Have you had a chance to play many games with your new job?
Not really. Recently, I've been sort of going through the old Infinity Engine games and playing through them. I just started Icewind Dale 2 for the first time. And
that's a
I'm also really excited that Shadowrun Dragonfall just came out, so hopefully I'll get to finish that over the next couple weeks. But the game I'm most excited about right now is Dominions 4, which is an independent game that came out. The fourth game in the series came out at the end of last year or earlier this year. I forget exactly when. And it's a great strategy game. A basic description is it's like Risk, except in this extremely intricate, diverse fantasy world. But it's a turn-based game where you capture territories and you build up large armies.
Pretty cool. For myself, I've been playing a game called To the Moon, or I should say I completed it. It's been a game that I've owned for a while that I just hadn't sat down and completed, and I finally just blocked out the time and did it. And I'm really glad I did, because it was really, really interesting. It was done in RPG Maker, and it's more of a visual novel than it is an RPG, but it's got that kind of top-down pixelated look as you're going back in time into somebody's memories. It's got this kind of cool, not really Inception, but memory exploring storytelling game, and it was very beautiful. I would highly recommend people play it. I believe there's a sequel in the works too that should be coming out some point in the future.
Well, so I know that with RPG Maker you sort of easily fall into just making another, you know, old school JRPG type of game, because that's what it was designed for. Would you say that game kind of pushes the boundaries of what the engine can do?
Yeah, that's actually funny, because there's one combat-like moment in the game, and it's early on, so it's not really a spoiler, but it kind of mocks the fact that there's not going to be any combat in the game at all. It just uses the mechanic of a top-down walk around, talk to people, and they say stuff. That's all of the mechanics in the game. That's why I say it's more of a visual novel, you know, it made RPG Maker. So I think it's a very interesting use of the tool, where it has that kind of that common context, that common language of the way a game should look and a way it should feel and what you interact with, even though it's going for this completely different style of game and how it actually plays. Mechanically, you know, there's not really puzzles. It's more of you just talk with everybody, and then after talking with everybody, the solution kind of presents itself, that you collect enough memories to be able to go back in time even further. So it's not really difficult. It's not really a challenge to it, but I appreciate games like that they're more about telling a story in an interactive, non-linear way.
Yeah, that sounds like a really great idea.
Yeah, I believe it was in the Humble Bundle not too long ago. Or maybe it wasn't. Maybe I'm lying. But it certainly has Steam sales all the time, so I would highly recommend picking it up. I don't know what it's currently going for. All right, Throw, thank you very, very much for being on the show. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
If you wanted to find more about the show, you can go to beindienow.com, where you get show notes, past episodes. If you want to find out more about me, you can go to tobiamarks.com or send me a message on Twitter at tobiamarks. Do you have a website?
Not really, no.
You got a Twitter account?
Yeah.
What's your Twitter? Go ahead and plug it.
Umbral Angel, umbral as in a synonym for shadow, and then angel.
Very cool. All right. And everyone, hope you enjoyed listening. Thank you again, and Joe, and go out there and make some games.